Chapter 32. Questions to be asked.
We should leave for Watch Hill soon, Varen announced the next morning, with sunrise just pearling the sky outside. So don't dawdle.
Perrin looked up from his cold porridge to meet a steady gaze. The Aes Sedai expected no arguments. After a moment, she added thoughtfully,
Do not think this means I will aid you in any foolishness. You are a tricksome young man. Try none of it with me.
Tam and Abel paused with spoons halfway to their mouths, exchanging surprised looks. Clearly they had gone their own way, and the Aes Sedai theirs before this. After a moment, they resumed eating, although with pensive frowns. They left any objections unvoiced. Tomas, his warder's cloak already packed away in his saddlebags, gave them, and Perrin, a hard-faced stare anyway, as if he anticipated arguments and meant to stamp them out. Warders did whatever was necessary for an Aes Sedai to do what she wanted. She intended to meddle, of course, Aes Sedai always did, but having her where he could see her was surely better than leaving her behind his back. Avoiding Aes Sedai entanglements completely was all but impossible when they meant to dabble their fingers in. The only course was to try to use them while they used you. To watch and hope you could jump clear if they decided to stuff you head first like a ferret down a rabbit hole. Sometimes the rabbit hole turned out to be a badger's set, which was hard on the ferret.
You would be welcome too, he told Alana,
but she gave him a frosty stare that stopped him in his tracks. She had disdained the porridge and stood at one of the vine-shrouded windows, peering through the leafy screen. He could not say whether she was pleased with his plans for a scout. Reading her seemed near to impossible. I said I was supposed to be cool serenity itself, and she was that, but Alana tossed off flashes of fiery temper or unpredictable humor when least expected, like heat lightning, crackling, then gone. Sometimes she looked at him so that if she had not been Aes Sedai, he would have thought she was admiring him. Other times he might as well have been some complicated mechanism she meant to disassemble in order to puzzle out how it worked. Even Varen had the better of that. Most of the time she was just plain unreadable. Unnerving on occasion, but at least he did not have to wonder if she was going to know how to fit his pieces back together. He wished he could make Fael stay there. That was not the same as leaving her behind, just keeping her safe from white cloaks. But she had that stubborn set to her jaw and a dangerous light in her tilted eyes.
I look forward to seeing some of your country. My father raises sheep.
Her tone was definite. She was not going to stay unless he tied her up. For a moment, he came close to considering it. But the danger from white cloaks should not be that great. He only intended to look today. I thought he was a merchant, he said.
He raises sheep, too.
Spots of crimson bloomed in her cheeks. Maybe her father was a poor man and not a merchant at all. He did not know why she would pretend, but if that was what she wanted, he would not try to stop her. Embarrassed or not, however, she looked no less stubborn. He remembered Master Cawthon's method. I don't know how much you'll see. Some farms may be shearing, I suppose. Probably no different from what your father does. I'll be glad of your company in any case. The startlement on her face when she realized he was not going to argue was almost worth the worry of her coming along. Maybe Abel had something. Loyal was another matter altogether.
But I want to go,
the ogre protested when told he could not.
I want to help, Perrin.
You'll stand out, Master Loyal, Abel said, and Tam added,
We need to avoid attracting any more attention than we must.
Loyal's ears drooped dejectedly. Perrin drew him aside, as far from the others as the room would allow. Loyal's shaggy hair brushed the roof beams until Perrin motioned him to lean down. Perrin smiled, just jollying him along. He hoped everyone else believed that.
I want you to keep an eye on Alana, he said in a near whisper.
Loyal gave a start, and he caught the ogre's sleeve, still smiling like a fool.
Grin, Loyal. We are not talking about anything important, right?
The ogre managed an uncertain smile. It would have to do.
Aes Sedai do what they do for their own reasons, Loyal.
and that might be what you least expected, or not at all what you believed it was. Who knows what she might take into her head? I've had surprises enough since coming home, and I don't want one of hers added to it. I don't expect you to stop her, only notice anything out of the ordinary.
Thank you for that,
Loyle muttered wryly, ears jerking.
Do you not think it best to just let Aes Sedai do what they want?
That was easy for him to say. Aes Sedai could not channel inside an Ogier steading. Perrin just looked at him, and after a moment the Ogier sighed.
I suppose not. Oh, very well. I can never say being around you is not interesting.
Straightening, he rubbed a thick finger under his nose and told the others,
I suppose I would draw eyes at that. Well, it will give me a chance to work on my notes. I have done nothing on my book in days.
Varen and Alana shared an unreadable look, then turned twin unblinking gazes on Perrin. There was simply no telling what either thought. The pack animals had to be left behind, of course. Pack horses would surely occasion comment, speaking of long travel. No one in the Two Rivers traveled very far from home in the best of times. Alana wore a slight satisfied smile while watching them saddle their mounts, no doubt believing the animals in wicker hampers tied him to the old sick house, to her and Varen. She was in for a surprise if it came to that. He had lived out of a saddlebag often enough since leaving home. For that matter, he had lived out of his belt pouch and coat pockets. He straightened from tightening Stepper's saddle girth and gave a start. Varen was watching him with a knowing expression, not vague at all, as if she knew what he was thinking and was amused. It was bad enough when Fael did that sort of thing. From an Aes Sedai, it was 100 times worse. The hammer lashed with his blanket roll and saddlebags seemed to puzzle her, though. He was glad there was something she did not seem to understand. On the other hand, he could have done without her being so intrigued. What could be fascinating to an Aes Sedai about a hammer? With only the riding animals to prepare, it took no time at all to be ready to go. Varen had a nondescript brown gelding, as plain to the untrained eye as her garb, but its deep chest and strong rump suggested as much endurance as her warder's ferocious-eyed gray, tall and sleek. Stepper snorted at the other stallion until Perrin patted the dun's neck. The gray was more disciplined, and just as ready to fight if Tomas let it. The warder controlled his animal with his knees as much as his reins, the two seeming almost one. Master Cawthon watched Tomas's horse with interest. War-trained mounts were not much seen in these parts, but Varen's earned an approving nod at first glance. He was as good a judge of horseflesh as there was in the Two Rivers. No doubt he had chosen his and Master Althor's rough-coated animals, not so tall as the other horses, but sturdy, with gaits that spoke of good speed and staying power. The three Aiel glided ahead as the party started north, with long strides that carried them out of sight quickly in the woods, early morning shadows sharp and long in the brightness of sunrise. Now and then a flash of gray and brown was visible through the trees, probably on purpose to let the others know they were there. Tam and Abel took the lead, bows across the tall pommels of their saddles, with Perrin and Fael behind, and Varen and Tomas bringing up the rear. Perrin could have done without Varen's eyes on his back. He could feel them between his shoulder blades. He wondered if she knew about the wolves. Not a comfortable thought. Brown sisters supposedly knew things the other Ajahs did not. Obscure things. Old knowledge. Perhaps she knew how he could avoid losing himself, what was human in him, to the wolves. Short of finding Elias Machera again, she might be his best chance. All he had to do was trust her. Whatever she knew, she would likely use, certainly to help the White Tower, probably to help Rand. The only trouble was that helping Rand might not bring what he wanted now. Everything would have been so much simpler without any Aes Sedai. Mostly they rode in silence except for the sounds of the forest, squirrels and woodpeckers and occasional birdsong. At one point, Fael glanced back. She will not harm you, she said, her soft tone clashing with the fierce light in her dark eyes. Perrin blinked. She meant to protect him against Aes Sedai. He was never going to understand her or know what to expect next. She was about as confusing as the Aes Sedai sometimes. They broke out of the Westwood perhaps 4 or 5 miles north of Emmons Field, with the sun standing its own height above the trees to the east. Scattered copses, mainly leatherleaf and pine and oak, lay between them and the nearest hedged fields of barley and oats, tobacco and tall grass for hay. Strangely, there was no one in sight, no smoke rising from the farmhouse chimneys beyond the fields. Perrin knew the people who lived there, the Alloras in 2 of the big houses, the Bastiers in the others. Hard-working folk. If there had been anyone in those houses, they would have been at their labors long since. Gaul waved from the edge of a thicket, then vanished into the trees. Perrin heeled Stepper up beside Tam and Abel. Shouldn't we stay under cover as long as we can? 6 people on horses won't go unnoticed. They kept their mounts at a steady walk.
Not many to notice us, lad, Master Althor replied, as long as we stay away from the north road. Most farms have been abandoned, close by to the woods. Anyway, nobody travels alone these days, not far from their own doorstep. 10 people together wouldn't be noticed twice nowadays, though mostly folk travel by wagon, if at all.
It'll take us most of daylight to reach Watch Hill as it is, Master Cawthon said, without trying to cover the distance through the woods. We'd be a little faster along the road, but more chance of meeting White Cloaks, too. More chance somebody might turn us in for the rewards.
Tam nodded.
But we have friends up this way, too. We figure to stop at Jack Alcine's farm about midday to breathe the horses and stretch our legs. We'll make it to Watch Hill while there's still light enough to see.
There will be enough light, Perrin said absently. There was always enough light for him. He twisted in his saddle to peer back at the farmhouses. Abandoned, but not burned. Not ransacked, that he could make out. Curtains hung at the windows still. Unbroken windows. Trollocs liked smashing things, and empty houses were an invitation. Weeds stood tall among the barley and oats, but the fields had not been trampled. Have Trollocs attacked Emmons Field itself?
No, they have not,
Master Cawthon said in a thankful tone.
They'd have no easy time if they did mind. People learn to keep a sharp eye out winter night before last. There's a bow beside every door, and spears and the like. Besides, the White Cloaks patrol down to Emmons Field every few days. Much as I hate to admit it, they do keep the Trollocs back.
Perrin shook his head. Do you have any idea how many Trollocs there are?
1's too many, Abel grunted.
Maybe 200, Tam said. Maybe more. Probably more.
Master Cawthon looked surprised.
Think on it, Abel. I don't know how many the White Cloaks have killed, but the warders claim they and the Aes Sedai finished off nearly 50 in 2 fades. It hasn't lessened the number of burnings we hear about. I think it has to be more, but you figure it out for yourself.
The other man nodded unhappily. Then why haven't they attacked Emmons Field? Perrin asked. If 200 or 300 came in the night, they could likely burn the whole village and be gone before the White Cloaks up at Watch Hill even heard about it. Still easier for them to hit Devon Ride. You said the White Cloaks don't go down that far.
Luck, Abel muttered, but he sounded troubled. That's what it is. We've been lucky. What else could it be? What are you getting at, boy?
What he's getting at, Fael said, closing up beside them, is that there must be a reason.
Swallow was enough taller than the 2 Rivers horses to let her look Tam and Abel in the eye, and she made it a firm look.
I have seen the aftermath of Trolloc raids in Saldaea. They despoil what they do not burn, kill, or carry off, people and farm animals, whoever and whatever is not protected. Entire villages have disappeared in bad years. They seek whatever is weakest, wherever they can kill the most. My father,
she bit it off, drew a deep breath and went on.
Perrin has seen what you should have.
She flashed him a proud smile.
If the Trollocs have not attacked your villages, they have a reason.
I thought of that, Tam said quietly, but I can't think why. Until we know,
look as good an answer as any.
Perhaps, Varen said, joining them, it is a lure.
Tomas still hung back a little, dark eyes searching the country they rode through as relentlessly as any Aiel's. The warder was watching the sky, too. There was always the chance of a raven. Barely pausing, Varen's gaze brushed across Perrin to the two older men.
News of continued trouble, news of Trollocs, will draw eyes to the two rivers. Andor will surely send soldiers, and perhaps other lands as well, for Trollocs this far south. That is, if the children are allowing any news out, of course. I surmise Queen Morgaze's guards would be little happier to find so many white cloaks than they would to find Trollocs.
War, Abel muttered. What we have is bad enough, but you are talking war.
It might be so, Varen said complacently. It might be.
Frowning in a preoccupied manner, she dug a steel-nibbed pen and a small cloth-bound book from her pouch and opened a little leather case at her belt that held an ink bottle and sand shaker. Wiping the pen absent-mindedly on her sleeve, she began jotting in the book despite the awkwardness of writing while riding. She seemed completely oblivious of any unease she might have caused. Perhaps she really was. Master Cawthon kept murmuring, "War," wonderingly, under his breath, and Fael put a comforting hand on Perrin's arm, her eyes sad. Master Althor only grunted. He had been in a war, so Perrin had heard, though not where or how exactly. Just somewhere outside the Two Rivers, where he had gone as a young man, returning years later with a wife and a child, Rand. Few Two Rivers folk ever left. Perrin doubted if any of them really knew what a war was, except by what they heard from peddlers or merchants and their guards and wagon drivers. He knew, though. He had seen war on Toman Head. Abel was right. What they had was bad enough, but it did not come near war. He held his peace. Maybe Varen was right, and maybe she just wanted to stop them speculating. If Trollocs harrying the Two Rivers were bait for a trap, it had to be a trap for Rand, and the Aes Sedai had to know it. That was one of the problems with Aes Sedai. They could hand you ifs and mights until you were sure they had told you flat out what they had only suggested. Well, if the Trollocs, or whoever sent them, rather, one of the Forsaken maybe, thought to trap Rand, they would have to settle for Perrin instead, a simple blacksmith instead of the dragon reborn, and he did not mean to walk into any traps. They rode on silently through the morning. In this region, farms were scattered, with sometimes a mile or more between. Every last one lay abandoned, fields choked with weeds, barn doors swinging in any errant breeze. Only one had been burned, and of that nothing stood except the chimneys, soot-black fingers rising from ashes. The people who had died there, Aelans, cousins of those who lived in Emmons Field, had been buried near the pear trees behind the house. Those few who had been found. Abel had to be pressed to talk about it, and Tam would not. They seemed to think it would upset him. He knew what Trollocs ate. Anything that was meat. He stroked his axe absently until Fael took his hand. For some reason, she was the one who seemed disturbed. He had thought she knew more of Trollocs than that. The Aiel managed to stay out of sight, even between copses, except when they wanted to be seen. When Tam began angling eastward, Gaul and the two maidens shifted with them. As Master Cawthon had predicted, the Alcine farm came in sight, with the sun still shy of its full height. There was not another farm in view, though a few widely separated gray plumes of chimney smoke rose both north and east. Why were they hanging on, isolated like this? If Trollocs came, their only hope was White Cloaks chancing to be near at the same time. While the rambling farmhouse was still small in the distance, Tam reined in and waved the Aiel to join them, suggesting they find a place to wait until the rest of them left the farm.
They won't talk about Abel or me, he said, but you three will set tongues wagging with the best will in the world.
That was putting it mildly, with their odd clothes and their spears, and two of them women.
A rabbit apiece dangled beside their quivers, though Perrin could not see how they had found time to hunt while keeping ahead of the horses. They seemed less tired than the horses, for that matter.
"Well enough," Gull said. "I will find a place to eat my own meal and watch for your going."
He turned and loped away immediately. Bane and Chiot exchanged glances. After a moment, Chiot shrugged, and they followed.
"Aren't they together?" Matt's father asked, scratching his head.
"It's a long story," Perrin said.
It was better than telling him Chiot and Gull might decide to kill each other over a feud. He hoped the water oath held. He had to remember to ask Gull what a water oath was.
"The Alcine farm was just about as big as farms went in the Two Rivers, with 3 tall barns and 5 tobacco curing sheds. The stone-walled cote, full of black-faced sheep, spread as wide as some pastures, and rail-fenced yards kept white-spotted milk cows separate from black beef cattle. Pigs grunted contentedly in their wallow, chickens wandered everywhere, and there were white geese on a good-sized pond." The first odd thing Perrin noticed was the boys on the thatched roofs of the house and barns, 8 or 9 of them, with bows and quivers. They shouted down as soon as they saw the riders, and women hustled children inside before shading their eyes to see who was coming. Men gathered in the farmyard, some with bows, others with pitchforks and bush hooks, held like weapons. Too many people. Far too many. Even for a farm as big as this. He looked a question at Master Althor.
"Jack took in his cousin Witt's people," Tam explained, "because Witt's farm was too close to the westward. And Flan Lewin's people, after their farm was attacked. White Cloaks drove the Trollocs off before more than his barns were burned, but Flan decided it was time to go. Jack is a good man."
As they rode into the farmyard, and Tam and Abel were recognized, men and women crowded around with smiles and a babble of welcome while they dismounted. Seeing that, children burst out of the house, followed by the women, who had been minding them and others, fresh from the kitchen, wiping hands on aprons. Every generation was represented, from white-haired Estelle Alcine, bent-backed but using her stick to thump people out of her way more than to walk with, down to a swaddled infant in the arms of a more than stout young woman with a bright smile. Perrin looked past the stout, smiling woman, then his head whipped back. When he had left the Two Rivers, Lila Dern had been a slim girl who could dance any 3 boys into the ground. Only the smile and the eyes were the same. He shivered. There had been a time when he had dreamed of marrying Lila, and she had returned the feeling somewhat. The truth was, she had held on to it longer than he had. Luckily, she was too entranced with her baby and the even wider fellow by her side to pay much attention to him. Perrin recognized the man with her, too. Natalie Lewin. So Lila was a Lewin now. Odd. Nat never could dance. Thanking the light for his escape, Perrin looked around for Fael. He found her idly flipping Swallow's reins while the mare nuzzled her shoulder. She was too busy smiling admiringly at Will Alcine, a cousin from Devon Rideway, to notice her horse, though, and Will was smiling back. A good-looking boy, Will. Well, he was a year older than Perrin, but too good-looking not to appear boyish. When Will came down to Emmons Field for dances, the girls all used to stare at him and sigh. Just the way Fael was now. True, she was not sighing, but her smile was decidedly approving. Perrin went over and put an arm around her, resting his other hand on his axe.
"How are you, Will?"
he asked, smiling for all he was worth. No point in letting Fael think he was jealous. Not that he was.
"Fine, Perrin."
Will's eyes slid away from his and bounced off the axe, a sickly expression oozing over his face.
"Just fine."
Avoiding looking at Fael again, he hurried off to join the crowd around Varen. Fael looked up at Perrin, pursing her lips, then took his beard with one hand and gently shook his head.
"Perrin, Perrin, Perrin," she murmured softly.
He was not sure what she meant, but he thought it wiser not to ask. She looked as if she did not know herself whether she was angry or
Could it possibly be amused? Best not to make her decide. Will was not the only one to look askance at his eyes, of course. It seemed that everyone, young or old, male or female, gave a start the first time they met his gaze. Old Mistress Alcine poked him with her stick, and her dark old eyes widened in surprise when he grunted. Maybe she thought he was not real. Nobody said anything, though. Soon enough, the horses had been led off to one of the barns. Tomas took his gray himself. The animal did not appear to want anyone else to touch the reins, and everybody except the boys in the rooftops had crowded into the house, just about filling it. Adults lined the front room too deep, Lewins and Alcines interspersed in no particular order or rank, children in their mother's arms, or relegated to peering through the legs of grown-ups, packing the doorways to peer in. Strong tea and high-backed, rush-bottomed chairs were provided for the newcomers, though Varen and Fael got embroidered cushions. There was considerable excitement over Varen and Tomas and Fael. Murmurs filled the room like a gabble of geese, and everyone stared at those three as though they wore crowns or might do tricks any moment. Strangers were always a curiosity in the Two Rivers. Tomas's sword drew a special comment, in near whispers that Perrin heard easily. Swords were not common here, or had not been before the White Cloaks came. Some thought Tomas was a White Cloak, others a lord. One boy, little more than waist high, mentioned warders before his elders laughed him down. As soon as the guests were settled, Jack Alcine planted himself in front of the wide stone fireplace, a stocky, square-shouldered man with less hair than Master Alvear, and that just as gray. A clock ticked on the mantel behind his head between two large silver goblets, evidence of his success as a farmer. The babble quieted when he raised a hand, though his cousin Wit, a near twin except for no hair at all, and Flan Lewin, a gnarled gray-headed beanpole, both shushed their own folk anyway.
"Mistress Mathwin, Lady Fael," Jack said, bowing awkwardly to each, "you are welcome here, for as long as you wish. I have to caution you, though. You know the trouble we have in the countryside. Best for you if you go straight away to Emmons Field or Watch Hill and stay there. They are too big to be troubled. I would advise you to leave the Two Rivers altogether, but I understand the Children of the Light aren't letting anyone across the Tarn. I don't know why, but there it is."
"But there are so many fine stories in the country," Varen said, blinking mildly. "I would miss them all if I remained in a village."
Without lying once, she managed to give the impression that she had come to the Two Rivers in search of old stories, the same as Moraine had done, what seemed so long ago. Her great serpent ring lay in her belt pouch, though Perrin doubted that any of these people would know what it meant. Eliza Alcine smoothed her white apron and smiled gravely at Varen. Though her hair had less gray than her husband's, she looked older than Varen, her lined face motherly. Very likely she thought she was.
"It is an honor to have a real scholar under our roof, yet Jack is right," she said firmly. "You truly are welcome to stay here, but when you leave you must go immediately to a village. Traveling about isn't safe. The same goes for you, milady," she added to Fael. "Trollocs are not something two women should face with only a handful of men for protection." "I will think on it," Fael said calmly. "I thank you for your consideration."
She sipped her tea, as unconcerned as Varen, who had begun writing in her small book again, only looking up to smile at Eliza and murmur,
"There are so many stories in the countryside."
Fael accepted a butter cookie from a young Alcine girl, who curtsied and blushed furiously, all the while staring at Fael in wide-eyed admiration. Perrin grinned to himself. In her green riding silks, they all took Fael for nobly born, and he had to admit she carried it off beautifully. When she wanted to. The girl might not have been so admiring had she seen her in one of her tempers, when her tongue could flay the hide off a wagon driver. Mistress Alcine turned to her husband, shaking her head. Fael and Varen were not going to be convinced. Jack looked at Tomas.
"Can you convince them?" "I go where she tells me,"
Tomas replied. Sitting there with a teacup in his hand, the warder still seemed on the point of drawing his sword. Master Alcine sighed and shifted his attention.
Perrin, most of us have met you one time or another down to Emmons Field. We know you after a fashion. At least, we knew you before you ran off last year. We've heard some troubling things, but I suppose Tam and Abel wouldn't be with you if they were true.
Flan's wife, Adina, a plump woman with a self-contented eye, sniffed sharply.
I've heard some things about Tam and Abel, too. And about their boys running off with Aes Sedai. With Aes Sedai! A dozen of them! You all remember how Emmons Field was burned to the ground? The light knows what they could have got up to. I heard tell they kidnapped the Alvear girl.
Flan shook his head resignedly and gave Jack an apologetic look.
If you believe that, Wit said wryly, you believe anything. I talked to Mar and Alvear 2 weeks ago, and she said her girl went off on her own hook. And there was only one Aes Sedai.
What are you suggesting, Adina?
Eliza Alcine put her fists on her hips.
Come out with it.
There was more than a hint of I dare you in her voice.
I didn't say I believed it, Adina protested stoutly. Just that I heard it. There are questions to be asked.
The children didn't latch onto those three by pulling names out of a cap.
If you listen for a change, Eliza said firmly, you might hear an answer or two.
Adina set herself to rearranging her skirts, but though she muttered to herself, she held her tongue otherwise.
Does anyone else have anything to say?
Jack asked with barely concealed impatience. When no one spoke, he went on.
Perrin, no one here believes you are a dark friend any more than we believe Tam or Abel is.
He shot Adina a hard look, and Flan put a hand on his wife's shoulder. She kept silent, but her lips writhed with what she did not say. Jack muttered to himself before continuing.
Even so, Perrin, I think we have a right to hear why the White Cloaks are saying what they are. They accuse you and Matt Cawthon and Randall Thor of being dark friends. Why?
Fael opened her mouth angrily, but Perrin waved her to silence. Her obedience surprised him so, he stared at her a moment before speaking. Maybe she was ill.
White Cloaks don't need much, Master Alcine. If you don't bow and scrape and walk wide of them, you must be a dark friend. If you don't say what they want, think what they want, you must be a dark friend. I don't know why they think Rand and Matt are.
That was the simple truth. If the White Cloaks knew Rand was the Dragon Reborn, that would be enough for them, but there was no way they could know. Matt confused him entirely. It had to be Fane's work.
Myself, I killed some of them.
For a wonder, the gasps that rounded the room did not make him cringe inside, and neither did the thought of what he had done.
They killed a friend of mine, and would have killed me. I didn't see my way clear to let them. That's the short of it. I can see where you wouldn't, Jack said slowly.
Even with Trollocs about, Two Rivers people were not used to killing. Some years ago, a woman had murdered her husband because she wanted another man to marry her. That was the last time anybody had died of violence in the Two Rivers that Perrin knew. Until the Trollocs.
The children of the Light, Varen said, are very good at one thing. Making people who have been neighbors all their lives suspicious of each other.
All the farm folk looked at her, some nodding after a moment.
They have a man with them, I hear, Perrin said. Padan Fane, the peddler. I've heard, Jack said. I hear he calls himself by some other name nowadays.
Perrin nodded.
Ordeeth. But Fane or Ordeeth, he is a dark friend. He admitted as much. Admitted to bringing the Trollocs on Winter Night last year. And he rides with the White Cloaks.
That's very easy for you to claim,
Adina Lewin said sharply.
You can name anybody Dark Friend.
So who do you believe? Tomas said. Those who came a few weeks ago, arrested people you know and burned their farms, or a young man who grew up right here?
I am no Dark Friend, Master Alcine, Perrin said. But if you want me to go, I will.
No,
Eliza said quickly, shooting her husband a meaningful glance, and Adina a freezing one that made her swallow what she had been about to say.
No. You are welcome to stay here as long as you like.
Jack hesitated, then nodded agreement. She came over and looked down at Perrin, resting her hands on his shoulders.
You have our sympathy, she said softly. Your father was a good man. Your mother was my friend, and a fine woman. I know she'd want you to stay with us, Perrin.
The children seldom come this way, and if they do, the boys on the roof will give us plenty of warning to get you into the attic.
You will be safe here.
She meant it. She actually meant it. And when Perrin looked at Master Alcine, he nodded again.
Thank you, Perrin said, his throat tight. But I have things to do. Things I have to take care of.
She sighed, patting him gently.
Of course. Just you be sure those things don't get you hurt. Well, at least I can send you off with a full belly.
There were not enough tables in the house to seat everyone for the midday meal, so bowls of lamb stew were handed out with chunks of crusty bread and admonitions not to drip, and everyone ate where they sat or stood. Before they were done eating, a lanky boy with his wrists sticking out of his sleeves and a bow taller than he was came bounding in. Perrin thought he was Wyn Lewin, but he could not be sure. Boys grew fast at that age.
It's Lord Luke, the skinny boy exclaimed excitedly. Lord Luke is coming!